A quick note here. We'll be saying the wake word for Amazon's smart speaker a lot in this episode, so you might want to press its mute button. Okay, on with the show.
So there's this secret apartment on the 30th floor of Amazon's Day One building in Seattle. We've wanted to get inside for months. I finally did.
Hello, welcome to the Day One Home Lab. I'm happy you're here.
I am jealous you're there.
You should be. This place was like stepping into Tomorrowland. It represents the company's vision for what a smart home could be. A quick definition here. A smart home is one where appliances and door locks and lights and even window blinds have electronics inside that let them be controlled remotely over a network. You control them using a phone or a smart speaker or something that hasn't been invented yet. Amazon uses this space to work through the kinks with product manufacturers. It's part lab, part showroom. There's a shower that Alexa can start for you, so the water warms up before you get in.
Alexa, turn on the shower.
There's a mirror with Alexa inside.
What, just a second. A mirror with Alexa inside? How does that work?
Alexa, how do I look today?
Yeah, she says,
I'm sure you look great, though it's what's inside that counts.
There's an espresso machine.
Alexa, tell my coffee machine to prepare an espresso.
Sure, one espresso.
Pretty cool.
And you can call up movies on the home theater system with just your voice.
Alexa, skip this preview. Seen this one.
It's good.
There's a connected dryer and lamps, and last but certainly not least, there's a twerking teddy bear.
Holy mother of God. A what?
Yeah, it shakes its behind to the music that you request from Alexa.
Oh no, that's terrible.
Here, we recorded it. You can hear its little plastic butt squeaking back and forth.
That is disturbing.
My reaction exactly. This does not sound like a child's toy either.
It's definitely PG-13, but they keep it around because it starts a lot of conversations. But, you know, putting the bear aside, I definitely had some questions. You know, because hanging out in this apartment, you cannot escape the realization that the future is here.
Alexa, play Ripples on an Evaporated Lake by Raymond Scott.
Ripples on an Evaporated Lake by Raymond Scott and the Evolution Control Committee, starting now on Amazon Music.
But that future is not as perfect as we want it to be. Not everything works, and sometimes it feels like smart home products just give companies an excuse to jack up prices without making them any better. But what if the path to a more functional smart home means giving Alexa more power to make assumptions and judgments about us and our behavior? In this episode, we look at what that means and how inviting Alexa into our homes can shape our lives and even our personal relationships. Amazon agreed to give me a tour of its smart apartment, but I didn't want just a simple tour where they'd show me all the bells and whistles in perfect working order. I wanted to test it, to push it to the limit. I'm Joshua McNichols.
I'm Carolyn Adolf. From KUOW in Seattle, this is Primed.
Coming up next, we're going to break a few eggs.
If you insist.
When you see coverage of Amazon's smart home technology on the news, everything works flawlessly.
Those smart devices can run your lights, blinds, temperature, all entertainment, even the door lock and doorbell. We got a sneak peek at one of these homes, seeing Amazon's hand in things from the very first touch.
but nothing is ever as smooth as it looks in those new spots. I wanted to test Amazon's model smart home with a household task that I thought might confound Alexa. So I came to the lab with a big bag of groceries and some cooking supplies and a dream to bake a batch of blueberry muffins.
How is baking blueberry muffins pushing it to the limit?
Because if there's one thing I have learned about Alexa, it's that in her current form, she's not good at multitasking yet. And baking is all about multitasking.
So how did your experiment work?
Well, let me start with the stuff that worked well, like asking for recipes on the screen of an Echo show.
Okay, for blueberry muffin, here's a few recipes and lots more.
Okay, I want to try this one.
Hello, this is Chef John from foodwishes.com with blueberry muffins. That's right, fresh homemade sour cream and blueberry muffins. Easy recipe, here we go.
With recipes on the screen, you don't have to touch a cookbook while your hands are covered with muffin batter. And Alexa turns the page for you.
Alexa, next step.
Stir in eggs until well mixed.
I did have some fun teasing Alexa about the things she can't do.
Alexa, help me get this eggshell out of the batter.
I'm not sure.
That's a cheap shot.
Yeah, you're right. And there are lots of times when you're cooking when it's great not to have to push buttons. Like when you're mixing batter and you need to preheat the oven.
Alexa, tell June to preheat to 375 degrees.
Okay, baking.
All right. Okay, let's see. Next step.
Who's June?
June is the brand of oven. Talking to Alexa is like playing a game of telephone. You're not talking to the devices themselves. You're telling Alexa to talk to the device. And sometimes it's like they don't speak the same language. One that really drove me up the wall was the voice-controlled Delta faucet.
But a faucet's so simple. It just does water.
Carolyn, I never noticed how often I need water when I'm cooking than during this experience. I mean, maybe you need to moisten a rag or wash egg off your fingers, and you don't think about it when you're cooking. You just flip on the water, and then you flip it off again, and you're done, right? But Alexa just didn't get it.
Alexa, turn on the sink. Alexa, tell Delta to turn on the sink.
I'm sorry. I didn't find device patio sink. Your device is named faucet.
Alexa, tell faucet to turn on the water. That worked. You gotta get down the right word, right? Alexa, tell the faucet to turn off the water.
Announcing.
Turn off the water.
Alexa, tell the Delta to turn off the water. Yeah, that worked.
I had to negotiate with Alexa for every drop of water. She's like a contrarian teenager, like, oh, did you mean this faucet?
So, can you buy this faucet now, or is it still in the testing stage? I mean, Amazon does use this place as a lab to test stuff, right?
Yeah, well, you can buy this faucet, all right. It costs over $500, which is twice as much as a similar faucet without Alexa. That particular product felt very half-baked. And a lot of smart home stuff does, actually. As the muffins were baking, I wrote down some questions for Amazon. We invited an Amazonian down to the lab to discuss them with us. His name's Nathan Smith, and he's the director of Smart Home Core Components at Amazon.
Hey, are you Nathan?
How's it going?
Good. We baked you some muffins.
Nice, it smells good. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Before I got into my complaints, I started with an easy question. How did Amazon get into this whole smart homes thing? He told me it began with a hackathon.
Of course it did.
Let me set the scene for you. It's 2015, and the Echo has just launched. You could play music on an Echo or ask it to put things in your Amazon shopping cart. But smart homes weren't really in the picture yet. That territory was owned by phone manufacturers like Apple. Philips, the light bulb company, had a system where you could remotely control smart light bulbs using your phone.
But, you know, it's not necessarily easier to, like,
get your phone out of your pocket, unlock the phone, you know, navigate to the individual app, open it up, find the screen for the light that you want to turn on, and then, you know, turn it on all through a mobile app. At a certain point, it's just easier to get up, right? And so walk over to the switch and hit it.
Yes, and avoid asking yourself all those questions that he just managed to ask himself about doing a simple thing.
Here's the thing, though. Philips had designed their system to encourage experimentation. It had what's called an open API, which means that anybody who could code could build an application that could remotely change the state of a light bulb, you know, whether it's on or off. Customers were already trying to knit together smart light bulbs and the Echo in their own homes. They were saying, Alexa, add turn on the lights to my shopping list. And that triggered another skill, which would then tell the light bulb skill to turn on the lights. It was kind of a Rube Goldberg type of thing, you know, all daisy chained together. The hackathon took that urge to connect Alexa and light bulbs and turned it into what was arguably the first smart home Alexa skill. And it helped Amazon conclude that Alexa had the key thing that could finally unlock the true potential of smart home devices, voice control.
What voice really did was for the first time, it made controlling these devices more natural, you know, faster, more reliable than, you know, having to go and turn on things manually. And I think that that's a watershed moment, because you get this sort of very futuristic experience that's also very simple and convenient.
I get it. It's easier to flip a switch than to control my bedroom lights from my phone, but it's even easier to ask Alexa to do it.
Right. And that discovery led to the creation of whole new divisions at Amazon. But I wanted to know if the momentum of these early smart home successes has made Amazon blind to places where smart home technology does not work, like the cantankerous Delta faucet. Smith told me they believe in the smart home, but they recognize it's still buggy. They're working on it.
We do think that, you know, having a hands-free experience to turn on the faucet is useful, right? Like if you have dirty hands, you know, you've been kneading dough or something like that, and then I can't, you know, hit the thing. Like everyone's tried to sort of elbow the faucet to get it into the right state. You know, there are places where we can make things simpler, and we're just going to keep refining until we make it truly, you know, simple and convenient for customers.
So this is the first lesson I learned. Smart homes at Amazon is a half-baked idea. When a faucet company rolls out an Alexa-enabled faucet, it's not done being designed.
Mm.
You know, it's still very much day one for smart home, and we're kind of figuring out the experiences. I mean, just thinking about the semantics of using something like a thermostat or using something like a microwave from voice, there's not a lot of precedent for that.
Developers continually update skills that control smart home devices.
Okay, wait, though. You're telling me that if I'm buying a Delta faucet with Alexa, I'm paying a premium to basically be a beta tester.
Well, yeah, but what's the big deal? I mean, that kind of thing is already happening with cell phones. They're never complete until a company stops updating the software. And at that point, they're garbage.
Yeah, but Joshua, with a faucet, breakfast, lunch, and dinner are at stake. Now, this is just not a faucet I want to have. But I do see what you're saying, and I suppose Amazon wouldn't say it's half-baked. They'd call it a continuous process of innovation and refinement.
That's true. And if you want to improve something, you know, if you want to refine something, you have to start by acknowledging the system's shortcomings. And there are so many.
Just going back to the sink example, I wish I could have just told Alexa to turn on the water. Like, why do I need to know the name of the manufacturer of the faucet in order for that to happen?
Right.
Or like with a convection oven, I could just say, turn on the toaster oven or, you know, to 375 instead of having to know that it was made by June,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, increasingly, that's what we're aiming at.
Smith says they're working on that too, and that Amazon wants Alexa to respond more naturally, more like a human.
If you asked a coworker, if you said to a coworker, hey, let's go get a sandwich, they wouldn't say like, oh, I don't know what sandwich you mean, right? They'd say like, you know, they might have the context, know like, oh, you always go to Freddy's. So they'd just be like, yeah, let's go to Freddy's. Or they would be like, oh, you know, which place do you want to go to? You know, do you want to go downtown? Do you want to, you know, eat around the office?
So they've launched something called Did You Mean? So if Alexa is unclear about what light you wanted to turn on, she'll ask, did you mean the kitchen light or the hood light?
But sometimes I'm pressed for time and I don't want to have to answer a bunch of basic questions. I just want my AI to make it happen.
And so they're giving Alexa the ability to make judgments so that even if she doesn't fully understand you, she can guess.
Well, you know, if we're going to cook something, it's probably going to be in the oven. So I can assume that, you know.
Alexa can assume that the garbled request that you made while reading a recipe was to preheat the oven, you know, not to preheat the shower.
Right. They want Alexa to be a bit less of a dum-dum. But let's be really clear. What you're telling me is that they are teaching Alexa to make judgments about what I say and then make decisions for me about what it thinks I'm thinking. And that is starting to give this device some power in the household.
Yeah. And they're also training Alexa to watch your behavior and to let you know if something seems out of place. Like to call out to you if you forget to lock the door one night on your way to bed. Amazon calls that ability hunches. See, part of the problem with Alexa now is that she requires precise instructions. A lot of these changes that we're talking about would let Alexa act on vague or incomplete instructions if she's able to convince herself through context and pattern recognition of your intent.
Well, I can see how this is useful. However, I have to say I've had a terrible experience with what must have been hunches. Because at 1 in the morning last week, I asked Alexa to turn off the air purifier. But Alexa actually turned on the bedroom light. 1 o'clock in the morning, Joshua.
Oh.
It was like it decided, well, sounds like she wants me to throw a switch. I guess I'll throw this one. So now my husband and I were both wide awake, and I was staring at the lampshade thinking, who gave you agency? Now I blame this hunches thing, though.
Alexa is still a work in progress, but that doesn't stop people from selling the hell out of it. That's coming up next. There's this tiny town called Black Diamond. It's about an hour south of Seattle.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
It was a coal mining town, and it was off the beaten track until a couple of years ago when developers swooped in.
Huge battle ensued, right?
Yeah. And now it's going to be home to one of Washington State's biggest developments. Hundreds of people live there already, and it's just getting started. Amazon has a presence here, too.
Is one of these the Amazon house?
Yes. So the one that has the sign in front of it that says Amazon Experience Center, that's the one that we're going to tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see new homes are still being built right now?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's going to be about 4,800 homes actually out here. Yeah.
Wow. Wait, Amazon's building 4,800 homes?
Well, no. Developers are building the homes. And one of those developers, Lennar, has partnered with Amazon to try to distinguish themselves from their competition here. They're building smart homes using Amazon technology.
Did they include those faucets that are a work in progress?
They did not include the faucets. But, you know, I wondered, what's it really like to live with this stuff? I spent a couple of hours in a test lab, but people who buy these homes are dealing with Alexa 24/7. So I went knocking on doors to see how neighbors feel about actually living with this technology. One family, the Fergusons, invited me into their home. They say they didn't go looking for an Amazon smart home.
It actually wasn't a factor at all. We just ended up liking the home and the builder and the neighborhood. So it was just kind of a plus that was added on when we didn't know what to expect.
That's Kelly Ferguson. I asked her to demonstrate something she uses regularly.
So in the wintertime when it's cold, and we had a lot of snow last winter, I could make sure that it was going to warm up before anyone went downstairs. So I'd say, Alexa, set the thermostat to 68 degrees.
And what you're hearing is a long, awkward pause.
And then it would kick on and warm up before we went downstairs. So
she's silent.
She flashed like she was listening. Alexa, set the thermostat to 68.
Sorry, something's wrong. The control thermostat. Try disabling the skill and then re-enabling it from your Alexa app.
So there's one of the things that can be annoying about it. We need to reinstall or update something because we haven't used the thermostat since May, probably.
Does that happen a lot?
That hasn't happened yet with the thermostat, but there are times that things that you're expecting she's going to know how to do, she'll say, sorry, I don't understand, or something like that. Yeah. So I don't know.
That thing with the thermostat was despicable.
At the Ferguson house, I saw Alexa mess up in other ways, too. Like when 17-year-old Corbin tried to get Alexa to help him with an algebra formula for his homework, and Alexa got confused.
Oh, well, that's strange. I guess it didn't want to tell me that, but that's...
Corbin and his 15-year-old sister Macy, they're willing to forgive Alexa because it works well enough of the time.
I just feel really fancy when I have people over or when I'm on a phone call and I say, Alexa, turn on the lights, or what's the weather? And they're like, that's really cool that you can have that to do that for you, because I feel like she's my little like servant or butler. I don't know. Butler.
Out of the mouths of babes, I think so many people secretly feel this way, having a little butler all of my own.
But for Kelly, the jury's still out.
I will use it because it's here, but if it was gone, I wouldn't miss it. So it's kind of, it's here and it's functional and the kids like it. So I could go either way on it.
Did you talk to anyone else in the neighborhood?
Yeah, and I heard a lot of the same thing. You know, I didn't buy the house for the smart home devices, but I've come to appreciate them.
Now I like would not live without them.
Like what?
I think the one is the front door bell with the video camera. I have a teenager. It's nice to confirm when they come home, and I have like proof of it. So that's a huge plus. Ironically, that's probably my favorite.
That's Drew Holmes, who lives on the same street as the Fergusons. Alexa lets him control access to his home no matter where he is.
So I was actually on a business trip in another state, and my stepdaughter realized she didn't have her key with her. So she just texted me, hey, can you open the door? And I opened the door from Oregon. And so that was nice. I didn't have to, problem solved.
Yeah, but Joshua, what do these houses cost?
You know, somewhere between the mid 400,000s to the mid 600,000s. But get this, I compared the smart homes with the ones built by another builder that are not smart. And the smart homes sell for $10,000 to $15,000 more.
I can see how individual households are using this. But did you notice any impact on the neighborhood?
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. I did notice something. There's sort of two camps growing in this community, and it's really apparent on the street the Fergusons live on, because on one side of the street, all of the houses are smart homes, and they have Ring doorbells with video cameras. And on the other side of the street, the houses were built by another builder, and they don't have smart home technology. Kelly Ferguson says when she walks down her street, she crosses over to the side without the smart homes, just to avoid needlessly popping up on her neighbor's cameras.
Oh, how fascinating.
She's not the only one in this neighborhood, though, who has mixed feelings about smart home technology. Theron Smith chose one of the houses that didn't include all that stuff.
And so just the thought of having cameras in every room and that potential exposure that could be, you know, found and exploited just kind of made us nervous about it. But again, I don't think it was bad intentions from, you know, the Lennar Homes, but just personal concerns.
Yeah. He actually works in tech, and he says that's how he knows the risks.
That data is not just sitting there just empty. Like, somebody's going to look at it and leverage it to try to turn a profit or try to create an ad or try to create some revenue.
Right. Surveillance capitalism. the idea that any data stream a company touches can be used to profit that company.
Yeah, he's bringing up an interesting point. I mean, in the same way that the Delta faucet will be continually updated, even after it's installed in your home, the policies behind smart devices can change too. But there's one more complicating factor to consider. It's one thing when you own a home and the household chooses to invite Alexa inside. It gets a lot more complicated if you're a renter. More on that after the break. So, Carolyn, I've been curious about how well smart homes work for their occupants, and I learned that often they do work great, but they're not perfect. I mean, there's upkeep to consider and concerns about data, but there's another really interesting piece of this. When you don't own or control the technology, things can get complicated. I brought in Franzi Rosner to talk about that. She's been studying smart homes for the University of Washington's Computer Science Department. She co-directs the Security and Privacy Lab there.
You know, one of the things we see with technology is that it can exacerbate existing power dynamics or existing tensions that may or may not be malicious. Sometimes they are, then it's even more concerning. But if the technology is not designed in a way that's thoughtful to those, it can actually make some of those situations worse.
Rosner offered me a couple examples from a study she did. In the first example, a woman is throwing a huge party in a home she's renting, and she did not tell the landlord about the party. Now, the landlord had installed a security camera, you know, in case of a break-in, and during the party,
someone unplugged the Nest camera in the kitchen because they wanted to recharge their phone.
As one does.
The camera has this feature where if somebody unplugs it,
it automatically sends an email to whoever's account is associated with the camera, and it has a photo of the last thing the camera saw.
And this notification said,
your camera was unplugged. This is the last thing the camera saw.
And it's a kitchen full of people having a huge party.
I think in this case, the landlord had set up those devices because they thought they would be fun and useful, not explicitly to surveil the people in the home. But it had this unintended side effect that led to an explicit notification to the landlord to see that there was a party going on.
So awkward. So did this person get in trouble with their landlord?
No. This particular landlord was like, isn't that funny? The camera sent me a picture of your party. Looks like you're having a great time. But, you know, you can imagine another landlord acting very differently.
Well, for sure.
Here's another example she gave me. A man has set up the thermostat in his house so that it's controlled through an app. And his wife complains all summer long that it's too hot, and she keeps turning up the air conditioner. So he shuts off her access to the thermostat account, which controls the air conditioner. And now, when she complains about the heat, he just tells her to turn on the ceiling fan and stand under it, because running the air conditioner costs money.
So this was an example where someone with presumably good intentions to save money and control the use of the thermostat used the smart home to actually control someone else's ability to use the devices in the home.
That's kind of alarming. I feel like you just put a huge elephant in the room. Like, that example is borderline abusive to me. Think about it. If someone can control your access to your own home or spy on you through cameras in the home, that could turn somebody's life into a living hell.
You're totally right. It's important to acknowledge, though, that technology companies are not responsible for broken relationships that turn abusive. But this is something Amazon's going to have to pay attention to. I asked Amazon about this, and they didn't have anything to offer that would help victims in abusive situations unless the victim happened to be the one who set up the account. But Rosner thinks daily about how these tools could be used in ways that increase one person's power over another.
Well, what does she say that we should do about it?
Well, she teaches engineers, so mostly she's not talking to us. She's talking to the designers of smart home technology. And she tells them to design not just for happy households, but also for when couples break up or landlords and tenants stop trusting each other. She says there has to be a clean way to disentangle our smart home worlds. But for users like you and me, she does have this advice. The person who sets up the devices needs to make sure that the other members of the household have access, like if they want it.
It may be that some household members say, I really don't care, set up whatever you want, and then tell me how to turn on the lights. And that's their right to say that. But the person setting everything up should be conscious of the fact that there is a power differential.
That power differential's kind of interesting. I tripped over it the other day. Remember when that light came on in the middle of the night and my husband blamed me?
Yeah.
Well, what he said was he had never wanted Alexa in the bedroom and that I had imposed it on him. So I brought this new element into our lives without him wanting it too. And that's something that I've actually had to address. It's a new situation and one we've never had happen before.
You know, it's one thing to buy a smart home for yourself, but it's another thing when your landlord imposes it on you. And this is something that people are experiencing across the country as landlords are starting to install smart locks and smart doorbells in renters' homes.
And that's why this isn't just a matter of reaping the rewards of digital convenience. It's also about asking ourselves what kind of a home we want to live in. And do we all want this exchange of convenience for giving up some control? How do we come to a decision that's right for our homes and our families?
Exactly.
And as the technology changes, our decisions may change too. What I may not want in a faucet, I may very well want in a water meter.
Yeah. Next time on Primed, we take you to the moon to see how a heart attack in space could spell the future for Alexa. Primed is a production of KUOW Public Radio. It's hosted by me, Joshua McNichols.
And me, Carolyn Adolph. Our producer is Alec Cowan. Our editor is Carol Smith. Our executives are Jill Jackson and Brendan Sweeney.
Music this week by Raymond Scott and Alec Cowan. You can find links on our website.
And we want to say here, we brought up domestic abuse in this episode. If you or someone you know is experiencing abuse, there are resources that can help you. You can check for those on the web post for this episode. Find it on our website, kuow.org.
This is our third season of Primed, and we want people to know about it. So we're asking you to help us get the word out. Write a review or tell a friend about it. It would mean a lot to us.
Thanks for listening.